This is the Power of Teen America podcast, and today we've got a quick check-in with the U.S. national team coach, Austin Brown. Austin is a 105-kilo equipped bench press national champion who is just 2 weeks out from the Bench Press World Championships in Sun City, South Africa. We talked about coaching at Open Worlds last year, the World Games, and the North American Regional Championships, and a whole lot more. Before we start, don't forget that we've got three big events coming up in the next 5 weeks with Bench Press World Championships starting May 20 in South Africa, Sub Junior, Junior, Master, and Equipped National starting June 2nd in Arizona, and Classic Open World starting June 11th in Malta. All of them will be streamed live, and we'll post the links in our Instagram story at powerofthing_America, so make sure you're following us there. Thank you to SBD and Elanco for their continued partnership with Powerlifting America. If you're looking to compete in drug-tested powerlifting, whether you're just starting out or you want to compete with the best in the world, make sure you go to powerlifting-america.com and become a member. Now, let's get to this quick check-in with Bench Press National Champion, Austin Brown. What is up? I've got Austin Brown with me here. He's the 105-kilo Bench Press National Champion, and we're just a few short days out from Bench Press Worlds in South Africa. How's it going, Austin?
Hey, it's going good. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, it's going good. Getting ready to go out to, you know, South Africa, and looking forward to that travel. Hopefully it's not as bad as some of the stories I've heard, but
yeah, you have to take some tips from like Bonica. I think she's got the best tips on, I think she had the smoothest of anyone. But yeah, like how many days out are we exactly?
I know I compete a week from Saturday, so I'm heading out there next Saturday night. Heading out a little early, going with my wife, so we can enjoy South Africa for a few days before I have to compete and hopefully get some rest in. So not far out.
Yeah, yeah. So it'll be June. I'm on the wrong list here. But it starts when? The 21st?
Yeah, the 20. I think it actually starts it's the 20th through the 27th.
Okay.
Yeah.
20 through the 27th. So we're talking like, yeah, we're less than a week out from the start of Bench Press Worlds. So man, that's exciting. It's been a long time coming. I know for the bench crowd, the bench specialists, like this is a date you must have had circled on your calendar for a while, is Bench Press Worlds.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely was. Last year was a little weird at being in Kazakhstan, and I know a lot of us opted not to go. I was one of those. I didn't make the switch over to PA until after Bench Nats, but so I didn't get to go to that one. And then of course Lithuania the year before, I didn't get to go to, even though I was invited, because that was chaos. So I know I'm excited about it. It's a good location. The wife's actually excited to go to this one. So
oh really, you're bringing her out with you, huh?
Yeah, she's coming. So it's nice. We had to do the nice hotel because I was bringing her along. But Yeah, it's not looking forward to the plane ride, but looking forward to competing. Got some good talent this year, so it should be fun.
Have you traveled overseas a lot or for powerlifting or anything?
Just for coaching with the equip team. I'm one of the assistants under James Townsend, and we travel over there to coach. I do extensive travel for work, but, you know, mainly for any powerlifting, it's just been that. So it'll be my first international competition.
That you're competing in.
Yeah, that I'm competing in. Yeah.
Nice. So were you in Viborg?
Yep. Yeah, we were up there. Incredible. It was a great
Denmark, right?
Yeah, Denmark. Yeah. It was wild, you know, because it gets dark so early there. And I wasn't expecting. I actually got like really sick when we were there. I was rooming with Mike Steinmetz, and he basically would just like come in and grab his stuff and leave because I was like deathly ill for a few days. So not the fondest memories of that, but it was good lifting, you know?
Well, that's the opposite of like everyone who I've spoken to who was at Denmark was just like, it was amazing. The food was amazing. Yeah. The setup was like the crowd. It was like kind of a stadium style seating and everything and immaculate facilities and everything like that. So
yeah, it wasn't the facilities that gave me the bad taste in my mouth. It was just me getting sick. No, it was a great venue, especially for the, you know, like IPF meet. They really stepped it up there, but yeah. And the food was great, the breakfast. The only thing is, like, as a coach, we didn't get done coaching until late. Mm-hmm. And finding food that late was that's always a difficult thing when you go internationally.
So was it a food poisoning situation or was it more just like a flu or something?
You know, I really think I had like the flu or something. I was just holed up and I just decided to sleep for like 48 hours. So I just passed out, didn't wake up, finally woke up and was like, all right, got to get back to coaching.
I mean, that travel does that, like, you know, you travel a lot for your job and everything, like it wears down your immunity. And then, you know, you get somewhere far overseas, especially with a lot of time zone changes, and you just feel sluggish for days. Like, I mean, there's just several days. And then Depending on where you're going, apparently it wasn't a problem in Denmark, but like a lot of places, if you eat the food, drink the water, stuff like that, like you're going to get a full like digestive reset going on, you know what I mean? Yeah. So that's going to like knock you back a couple of days too. So, but yeah, that's cool, man. So speaking of being an assistant coach for the Equip team, tell us like what all the different roles that you have in Powerlifting America.
Sure. So as a coach, I'm an assistant coach on the national open Equip team under James Townsend. I'm like the lowest man on the totem pole on that side. So we got me, Mikey Steinmetz, who's an incredible coach, and then Jeff Douglas, who's a legend in the game. And then James is kind of leading us. And then we're doing these silos now. So like if you're on the open raw team, you're going to have one of the assistant coaches as the head coach on the NAPF team. That way it's all in the same system to where if you've been in a couple NAPFs and you get called up to the open, you're used to the system. So now I'm heading up the NAPF team as the head coach for the open Equip side. And then bringing a couple guys down there with me to get some experience. So,
oh man, that's awesome. Like, yeah. You're going to be the head coach down there in the Cayman Islands.
It's not a bad place to be a head coach.
James and those guys are like, man, this guy is a low man on the totem pole and he ends up with like the best job that you can get out of all of us.
Yeah, I think I did end up with the good straw on this one.
Yeah, spend a week in the Cayman Islands, spend a week in like a luxury resort in South Africa. And then we'll see what the situation's like going to be in Lithuania later this year, you know?
Yeah.
Because I think that's where the open equipped worlds is that right?
Yep. Yeah, Lithuania.
Nice. So talking about coaching on the Equip side, because a lot of our listeners and stuff are, you know, on the raw side of things. Talk about a little bit, like, what are some of the differences and what are some of the things like, because like you guys have four coaches for that Equip team, the open Equip team for Worlds, but you guys have to do a lot of stuff. Like you're wrapping, you're getting people in shirts, you're getting people in squat suits and stuff like this. So just tell us a little bit, like I had my first experience watching Equipped back in Orlando last year. Oh, yeah. And I mean, and I've seen Burford running around there and at high school nationals this year. And it's just like, man, you guys have to work way harder than raw coaches.
Yeah, we have more of an impact whenever you get on the Equip side, right? And there's a lot of responsibility that comes with that. I think it's more nerve wracking to be an Equip coach than it is for me to compete, you know, because someone's trusting me, right? Like they've put in the work and now it's my time. So from a coaching perspective, we kind of have a setup where James runs everything at the top, right? He's like, he's Saban in this thing, you know? And he's handling all the strategy. He's handling, what are the other lifters doing? What do we need to do? So he's handling a lot of that high level, but then he needs people like me, Mike, to come in and just do the dirty work, man. Just wrap knees, make sure that that lifter is 100% comfortable. You know, don't pay attention to what's going on out here. I got that. You just handle that lifter. If they need a water, go get them, you know, like, you are their handler, you know, make sure they're comfortable. If they got issues, handle them. And then him and Jeff, you know, Jeff also gets in the weeds too, but him and Jeff are kind of the high level strategy guys. And then also just to have different people, we all wrap differently. We all handle differently. So we like to have a couple different flavors there so we don't get burned out. Like you said, it wears on the coaches a good bit, you know, handling these lifters. So we want to make sure everyone's fresh, you know, so we can, float people in and out.
I remember seeing Jim Brown in Panama last year.
That poor guy.
So he got the he got to go to Panama and it was a fun time and we had a blast. But I will tell you what, like having him wrap everyone from juniors to open to masters over a course, I think the Equipped part of NAPF is like 4 days or something. And then that was after coaching the raw team for like 4 days, you know, all different age classes and everything like that as well. That's when I really was like, holy shit, these Equipped coaches really have to do like physical work more. That's what I'm saying. Mentally, you know, the game is the game. It's still powerlifting and there's numbers to be ran and everything like this, but just the physicalness of like wrapping knees and like getting people in their squat suits and getting them in their shirts and pulling down on their shirts and everything like this. It's like, it's just so much more physical than what you have to deal with in raw.
Yeah, it's more fun though, too, I think, you know, because it adds another layer in there, right? Like, raw's great, but if you can coach Equipped, you can probably coach raw. I don't know if it's necessarily the case the other way around. Not saying they're not great coaches, it's just a different type of coaching, right? You know, you're doing a lot more.
I wouldn't know the first damn thing about how you ask me to wrap a knee or something. It would be like, no, you're in trouble if you're asking me.
Well, it takes time too. You know, you can be great. Like I started coaching raw and handling lifters for James Townsend out here in Georgia at like, you know, local meets and just kind of helping him here and there. And then it was like, all right, let's jump up and get you handling some equipped. And then, okay, you run these guys, I'm going to run these guys. And then I'm going to bounce back and forth to where now when we do like a local meet, James is running to the scorers table and then I'm handling all the lifters, you know? So it's a lot of fun. But it is chaos. And I think that's why it's fun, you know, because you're coming together as a team. It's a lot more of a team. We rely on each other a little more, which.
And I mean, I think the other thing is like you, when you're coaching on the equip side, I feel like you make a more of a difference in the lifter's performance. Like you said, if you give them a bad rap or if you don't get their shirt down far enough or whatever, like it can really mess. They're relying on you a lot more. I feel like on the raw side, it's like, put my numbers in, give me a slap on the back. And like, that's, you know, you're not really going to change how I lift too much.
Right.
You know, I mean, you might know. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, even if your timing's off, whenever you're wrapping knees, right. Yeah. Let's say you're wrapping them three out and those three happen to go quick. And now the lifter only has 30 seconds on the clock and you got to get them out there.
Yeah.
Or you fumble a wrap in Daytona and Taylor LaChapelle never forgives you for it. These are things that happen.
Tell us the story. What happened?
So she talked about this on the Spicy PL podcast, and this is totally my fault, right? I was, I had competed the day before at Bench Nationals down there. Actually, that was the first time I won one. And James said, hey, we might need your help tomorrow. Big Lou might not be able to, you know, make it. And I said, okay. So he's getting me rapping all these people. And then he's like, hey, you got to go rap Taylor. And Taylor is a savage. I mean, you cannot rap her raps tight enough. And I was trying to rap him as tight as I could. Well, I fumble one because my forearms are shot. And I was like, I look at the clock. We got like, they already started it. And I'm like, I got to finish rapping this just raw dog, you know? Mm-hmm. And she's strong. She could have squatted it. But man, she came off of that platform. And the look she gave me terrified. She's like, you know, she's like a 63 kilo. Mm-hmm. I think at the time she was 57 kilo lifter. She might still be, and terrified me as a 105. I'm literally twice her weight. And I'm like, oh, Jesus, don't do this again. So yeah. And then after it was funny because one of the guys, a lightweight man, a guy that I was rapping after goes, wrap me as tight as you can. I go, you want it as tight as Taylor? He goes, yeah. So I did it. And he was like, never wrap me that tight again. What are you doing? And she said, I didn't wrap tight enough. So, yeah, that was, yeah, she called me out. Well-deserved call out too, because I fumbled that rap.
She's like, you're fired. Where's Jeff Douglas? Like, I need a guy that knows how to actually rap tight over here. You know,
it was like, where's Jeff or Mike? Why aren't they here? And I was like, I'm sorry. So don't feel me.
Did you wrap her knees the rest of the meet? Or
I did. Yeah, raps two and three went off without a hitch. But I think she hit like a PR that day, and I think it was out of spite. it was out of a good rap job.
You fueled it. You fueled the PR.
Hey, whatever you got to do, right?
Hey, that's one of the, now you can play it off as like, I intentionally kind of messed with her raps a little bit, got her hyped up, got her anger going, got the juices flowing. Taylor is a star in the sport. I mean, there's no other way to describe her other than that. I'm so excited that she's coming over. She's actually lifting in Scottsdale in 3 weeks. She's a 63. Yep. And so we're going to have a stacked on the women's side between her and Kimmy Johnson coming over, Kelsey McCarthy coming over. We got like world champs, you know, up and down the roster now.
Yeah.
So I'm pumped for equipped women's side, especially.
One of them that they're not quite as talking about as much because she was younger last year is Catherine Cargill, and she trains out in the gym, and she's getting stronger day by day, you know, but she's one of those with that same mentality of Taylor where it's like this calm, steady, like, don't mess with me. Like I will like very, you know, like simmering and like as nice as could be, but like, there's a competitor in her that, that actually her brother's going to be helping me on the NAPF team. He's also in, he's a raw lifter, but he helps us equipped. And Catherine's an absolute competitor, and she's going to be one of those that I think she just turned 18. I mean,
she was on our team last year, so she's been with us for a minute. She's not just coming fresh off from USVI this year. No. But didn't she either went to Junior Worlds or Open Worlds? Did she go to Open Worlds?
She went to Open. So her dad and brother came over. Her dad also competes. So actually, they're gonna have the whole family competing in Scottsdale. Her dad, brother, and her.
Wow.
And then they run all the meets here in Georgia now for Powerlifting America too.
I'd heard about that, and I'm excited because it looks like they run good meets.
It was a 30-person meet, and it was put on at a higher production value than any other federation that I've seen in Georgia. I mean, it was ran nicer than the old state meets were in an old fed, and it just incredible. So they really put you know, they care about the sport. They don't care about the money as much. So it's nice.
I've been hearing a lot of things, good things about them, a lot of positive stuff about the family and stuff, and having them come on board in Georgia and being able to run meets out of Atlanta, I think, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Out of Atlanta. Yeah. So it all spurs from James Townsend. We can get a little into that.
Yeah,
he's
tell
my coach. He's the head coach of the U.S. team for Open Equipped. And he's been in the game forever. If you talk to any of the top equipped lifters, you know, who do you want calling your numbers on the national team? It's James. And
yeah,
he started coaching me back in 2015 after my first meet. An old lifter you probably have never heard of named Brooks Conway. Me and him grew up together, and I got into powerlifting. He said, "Hey, you need to check out James." And so I did. I let him coach me for one meet, and it was like night and day. And then he got me in a shirt. I think I benched like less than 200 keys my first time in a shirt. I think it was like 400 pounds. And and now I'm closer to 7, you know. So
yeah.
I was just sticking with James. And then, you know, he taught me enough to where I thought I could program myself, but for some reason I think I'm Superman, and I end up hurting myself when I do my own programming.
So you back, is he programming you now?
Yeah, I tried like a couple years ago, probably like 5 years ago, to do my own. And it was like, this doesn't even make sense. I'll just have James do it for me, because I'm an idiot. You know, I do fine when I'm programming for other people, but for myself, it doesn't go as well.
Yeah.
So he's my coach, and he's kind of kept equipped lifting alive in the Southeast down here in Georgia. With his gym, Elite Iron, which I'm repping today.
I like it. I need one of those.
Yeah, hey, we'll have to get you one. Maybe I'll bring one over to Nationals. And
yeah,
he's got a whole, I mean, basically the national team last year, a majority of those lifters came out of Elite Iron. So
yeah,
we have a great team.
And I mean, he's been the head coach before as well of U.S. national team, I believe, for years and years and years in the past, I believe.
Yeah. And I mean, he's been involved for 20 years at the national level.
Yeah. And so like, he's really well known. So I think even people that aren't coached by him are like kind of, you know, been influenced by him or coached by someone who's coached by him, you know, stuff like that. Between him and Jeff Douglas, they pretty much touched every single lifter and on the equip side, it seems like.
Yeah.
And so here's a question I have. Cause I think we'll have a hard time getting James on the podcast, but
you're not going to get James on the podcast. I can tell you that now. A, he's too busy, and B, so, like, he goes, he wants to shoot it straight. What's the, you know, what are the numbers?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Like, he just, you know.
Yeah. And he's busy, right? Like, he coaches other athletes too. Like athletes that are not just in powerlifting as well and stuff, I believe. Right. Like athletes that are in football and other sports.
Yeah. So yeah, he used to be at GATA a long time ago, and that was where they did all the combine stuff. So back when I started with him, he was doing a lot of that. And then he shifted, opened his own gym.
Okay.
And now I think he has like a 50-man roster in powerlifting, and then he has all his like normal clients, which are mainly, you know, high school kids, some college kids playing football, come home for the summer, go out and train with him. But yeah, he coaches everybody, so it's cool. A lot more than just you know, just powerlifters.
And does he? Here's my next question: does he lift?
Oh yeah, James lifts.
He still lifts now.
Yeah, James always lifts. James is a conundrum of a man. He lifts, but he likes to lift by himself, and his whole thing, it's all about like quality, right? So he won't lift if it's going to impact us in any negative way, which means if we're at the gym and it's just two of us, like it's been on Friday mornings, at the end of our workout he'll work out, but he won't work out like while we're there. And like, we pay him for programming, but we don't pay him for in-day coaching, and he still does shit like that for like me and Will, because we've been on so long, you know. And so I was asking him about bench nats, and I said, are you going to go next year? You know, it might be in Austin for Bench Worlds. Like, are you going to go? And I said, you should go equipped. And he goes, man, I can't. And I go, why? And he goes, because if I go equipped, it's going to take away from y'all's. And that's just kind of how he thinks about it, you know?
That's totally the vibe that I got. And just from the interactions I've had with some of the people on the equipped team, I had a great conversation with him in Orlando last year, like shot the shit with him for like over an hour, probably. He opens up, you know, after the meet is over and you're having a few Bud Lights and stuff, for sure. And so, but yeah, I was just curious, like, if he's still lifting, but he seems like that kind of guy that like, he's always putting everyone else first and then never really taking time for himself to lift.
I mean, he does though. He trains in his garage. In the morning. He has a state-of-the-art, incredible gym, you know, but he trains in his garage on like all the old equipment, 'cause he saves the new stuff for the gym. So that's just who he is, you know. But yeah, he still trains. I mean, the guy's still benching, you know, like 400 pounds. I mean, he's still an animal. But, you know, at his level of coaching and how he coaches and how thorough and professional he likes to be.
Yeah.
I always mess with him. I'm like, tag me in, like, because I'm still competing and I also coach. And he's like, man, get out of here with that. You know, like, if we're going over there, you're either going to coach or you're going to compete. We don't do that both stuff. Because in his view, it's very old school. And like, you're going to put more into it as a coach than a competitor. And it's better to do one thing right than two things half-assed, you know?
Yeah, it's very hard for these coaches to actually compete themselves. I mean, especially like you all that are national team coaches and stuff, like going to Worlds and whatnot. It's very difficult. Like you wouldn't be able to compete at Equipped Worlds just because you got so much work to do for handling and for game day coaching. So
yeah, let's say that's the reason I can't compete at Equipped Worlds. I'm just too busy. It's not because I can't squat or deadlift for the shit. It's because I'm too busy.
But I mean, this is kind of a cool outlet. So I that was a good question to ask him about, like maybe he'll do Bench Worlds because that would be something where maybe he, you know, it's a little bit less intense. You're not wrapping knees and stuff.
Right. I don't know. It's we'll see. We're trying to push him on it. We're going to have, if it is in Austin and it's finalized, you'll probably see the entire Elite Iron roster out there next year at Bench Worlds, and we'll come and try to flood the platform in Austin. So
yeah, that's gonna be exciting. The rumors are swirling. Powerlifting America might be getting their first world's level competition here in the United States, which will be super exciting, and we'll just see where it goes. But all right, well, let's talk a little bit more about you. This is our quick check-in, you know, with you, so we want people get to know you a little bit, stuff like that. So tell us first, just kind of like your little bit, like a quick backstory of how you got into powerlifting, how you found powerlifting specifically out, you know, outside of just like general exercise.
Yeah. So I've always trained through high school and you know, I was a football player. I blew out my knee my senior year and I was a good enough football player to have some like, you know, D3 offers and stuff, but not good enough to get hurt and come back.
And what position? Linebacker.
I played linebacker. I played outside linebacker, and actually I played center just because I was mean. I'd cut block everybody. I mean, that was my jam, you know.
Small and, center, cut blocking everyone fast.
And then I got taken out with a knee injury. So I think that's karma.
Yep.
I got, you know, so after that I said, okay, well, what can I do? And I got into like natural bodybuilding stuff. And that was cool. Just to see what I could do to my body, but the subjectivity of it, I was not a huge fan of, right? It's like, you know, there's no like clear cut, you know, who won. Like, well, it's all opinion at that point. And I don't like that. So I noticed my legs were pretty small and I wanted to build them up. And I said, I got to get into something that'll put some mass on my legs. So I started, you know, squatting heavier and deadlifting, and I always had a good bench. And my buddy Brooks Conway that I mentioned earlier said, hey man, you should do a powerlifting meet. And I was like, maybe. And I ended up just signing up for one and did it on my own and did pretty, my cousin Maurice Young was another guy who pushed me to do it. And I met James at that meet. And I think I went like 3 for 9. I don't remember. It's on Open IPF, but it was not a good meet. I mean, it was really bad. I think I only benched like 340 or 330 or something like that.
157. And you went, no, you did better than you said. You went 7 for 9.
Okay. 7 for 9. But I mean, we cut way back on my numbers and, like, cause I was wanting to do some crazy stuff. And James actually came over cause he knew I was Brooks's friend and started meeting with Reese, who was handling me, and was like, hey, back this number down. Hey, dude, you know, he started coaching me in real time. And after that, I said, okay, I got to get with this guy. And, I was raw back then. And then I did a raw bench only meet and I met all these monsters in these bench shirts. I forget the guy's name, man. He's a coach up at Liberty University. He does like the unlimited multiply class stuff now. But he was doing the meet and I watched all these animals and I was like, I saw some guy drop like 700 pounds on him and all this stuff. And I was like, I want to do that. Like, that is exciting.
Yeah.
So I went back and told James, and at the time I had a hurt pec, so I couldn't really compete. And he was like, let's try you in a shirt. And so I tried a shirt. I absolutely loved the additional like layer of complexity to it.
Yeah.
And the skill level, right? At that point, it's not just who's the strongest, it's who's the strongest, who can take the most pain, and who can take the most pain and put in the most work to get good with their equipment, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's like, and then it's a lot of technique. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like comparing like F1 and NASCAR, right? They're both fun sports, but F1 is going to be a much, like, you know, it's a lot different than stock car racing, right? Like, yeah. It's a lot more fine tuned. Like, if you mess up a little, the stakes are a little higher.
Yeah, exactly. So,
and it's actually kind of funny because everywhere else in the world, F1's a lot more popular.
Yeah.
In America, NASCAR.
And it's kind of the same, very similar here. I mean, we're equipped is very popular around the rest of the world, mm-hmm. for sure.
So that's what made me love it, man. It was just like, this is hard. My chances of dying are significantly more. It can go bad really fast. And that brought a lot of adrenaline and excitement. So that's what kind of drove me over there. And then I just started. I remember I battled at like 500 pounds for a long time, trying to bench, it was, you know, 225 was 496. Mm-hmm. And battled there for a long time and just kept chipping and getting better in a shirt and getting stronger and just slowly climbed up. So that's kind of... I still do full power occasionally, but
you bench 227.5 in your first equipped bench only meet. And that was 6 months after you did your first raw bench only meet.
Yep.
And you opened, for people who just want to see, like, this is 6 months difference in, you know, between these two competitions, and you open 60 kilos heavier.
Yeah.
60 kilos heavier, not 60 pounds.
Yeah.
But yeah, you open 160, your first one, you open 220, your second one.
Yeah.
So like, that's gotta be fun. Like, right. Like, and you're talking about, like, you know, breaking 500 and everything like that. And then boom, you put the shirt on and 6 months goes by and you're hitting 227.5 on your second attempt. So.
Yeah. I was one of those weird ones too, where my body's built to bench, you know, and I always had a decent bench and I took pretty well to the shirt, but like, there's other people who struggle through it. Dale McLaren trains at our gym, and that guy has like scraped and clawed for every pound he's gotten out of that shirt. But he's still up there in like the 600 range. But, you know, his path has taken a lot longer because he's not built for it necessarily. He has longer arms. But I was built for it. So I trained under some like legends when I came in. I mean, we had like Doc Holloway, which another guy you're never going to find on Instagram, and he's a legend in the sport.
But he's still lifting. I remember the name, or is kind his son of, lifting?
He just retired. We're trying to pull him back for next year for bench only. But I mean, he's an absolute legend.
I want to say he was in Orlando last year, right?
He was. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I think cool. that was his last meet.
Okay.
Yeah, and then he kind of hung it up. So we always try to pull him back in, but you know, it's a lot. He's getting older, but he's incredible. He's a good coach too. He doesn't coach, but like, if you get him to handle you at a meet, he's great. We had a lot of guys out there at the time that were really good, you know, like Brooks was still in lifting and he was a great 83. We had Mark Freeman at the time would come through. These are all like forgotten names now, right?
Yeah.
But at the time they were really good lifters. And then Dale was a really great lifter back then. So we had this gym full of, you know, pretty stacked lifters equipped wise. And I got to learn from all these guys. And it helped also learning under James, you know?
Yeah. And now you can pass this knowledge on down to the next generation and
right.
as a coach, especially, and, you know, coaching all the different teams, like being at NAPF, you're going to get roped into wrapping some knees for some juniors and stuff, even though you're there to coach, you're there to coach open. I mean, there's masters, there's juniors, sub juniors, all that. So it's like, you're going to definitely be having some fun. It'll be a fun time and you'll be inspiring the next generation as well. Like being hand to hand with them and stuff like that. So, so that was back in 2015 when you started.
Yep.
So that's 8 years, 8 years ago already. So you're kind of already like an OG in the game, even though it doesn't seem like that long ago, I guess, huh?
No, I still feel like a baby in the game, right? When I came in, I was the youngest guy by like, you know, I was like 24 when I came in.
Yeah.
And they were like, you know, I was the baby and now I'm looking around and there's all this new generation and it's kind of weird, you know? But this is what we were aiming for when I started with James. He said, I don't care what you do at the next meet. I don't care what you do the next five meets. If you want to be one of the best in the world, which I told him I did, he said, you have to aim for 10 years from now. That's where we're going to peak you. You know, it takes time to be a champ. It's not like, unless you're a genetic freak, it's not totally. Over. You know,
totally. You got to scrape and claw. It's a marathon in powerlifting.
And I like to think about the next meet only. And that's why I hurt myself if I do my own programming where James is doing a 10-year outlook. Like, okay, like to me, this is my last meet ever. I'm going to South, you know, but like,
yeah,
he's still ahead 3 years. And like, well, where are we going to be then? What do we need to hit now?
You kind of have the vibe of like, I want to just leave it all on the table now.
Yeah. Yeah, right. He's like, which is good from an athlete's perspective, yeah. But I mean, I'd much rather have an athlete who's like that than like, you know, always pulling back. Right.
Totally.
I'd rather pull the reins on somebody, you know, to bring up like a horse analogy, like pulling the reins back with a horse that's real flighty than one that's hard. You got to really kick them to get them out of the stall.
Yeah.
So yeah,
and that's where you have James to do that. You know, that's what's good.
Yeah. Yeah. So, he knows me better than I know me. I used to fight him on stuff and then everything he'd let me, you know, he'd give me enough rope to hang myself. And I've blacked out under, you know, benching like 550, just dropped it, just, you know, passed out. And he's like, well, did you learn something? You know, I told you not. And I'm like, no.
Wow, man. So yeah. That's why people who are listening to this, like, this is the kind of crazy shit that happens in equipped, man. People are just like black out in the middle, drop a bar on themselves, like so much crash and burn going on, like on the equipped side. That's just, I mentioned it before when I was talking with Zen, it's just like the misses are so much more exciting on the equipped side than they are on the raw side, you know, like you could miss it a lot of different ways. And you could look like, I mean, I saw this young girl in high school nationals on Burford's team. I think her last name is Crutcher, Camille Crutcher, something like this. She dropped a bar right on her face. And they had the safety set just high enough that it kind of like nicked her a little bit. Like she had like a little bruise and she was getting ice on it. And then comes back out. I think she might have got her next bench after that. And then comes back out and deadlifts and everything and just like totally fine. But you see people miss badly. Like it looks like an absolute catastrophe. Like if you were a raw lifter, you'd be like, whoa, like you shouldn't even finish the meet. And then and then they just come back out and smoke it on the next attempt. Like it's no big deal. It's just, it's very fun. It's very fun to watch.
James always says shapes and colors. Can you still see shapes and colors? All right, we're good. Keep rocking, you know? Because it does, it'll do that to you. And I remember I dumped 485 on my face once. And Dale was spotting me at the gym and we had one of those bench blocks on it. And I just dumped it back on my face. It was right before that first meet and he had to hold it up and like pull it off of me so I could get out from underneath it. And then I blew a bolt out at the Daytona Nationals back in 2020. Actually ended up winning that Nationals. I came back and put a different shirt on, but on my opener, I, you know, blew it out. It's just part of it, man. You just gotta, all right, where's my next shirt? Let's, you know, roll with it.
And, okay. So when you said you blew a bolt out, a bolt is a shirt. Okay. A
bolt is a bench shirt. Yeah. And it's the only one that I really like. I've tried them all. I love the people at Titan. I absolutely love them. I just don't bench as good in their shirts. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's the way I'm built or what, but I've always benched better in Enzer gear. And so, yeah, I started in a bolt and, I've blown one out. I've passed out. You got to make some sacrifices to the bolt gods if you want it to work for you.
Okay.
And that means bombing out of a few meets by getting choked out and passing out or blowing out a bolt. You know, it's part of the sacrifice. But once you do it, it's pretty loyal. So,
I'm just quick scroll through your. Oh, yeah. You have bombed out a couple times. Oh, yeah. at bench nationals.
That was a tough one.
Yeah. 2019. So tell us about that story then. What happened on that one?
Yeah, that one was a tough one. So Lou, I don't know if you know Lou at all. He's one of the guys under Cap up there. He's a big bencher. I went out there and I was thinking I was going to be able to compete with him. I dropped down to 93, I think, at the time though, and he bumped up to 105. But I said, you know what? I got a good shot here. I was still benching in a Titan shirt, but my cut went really bad. So here's an added thing: whenever you go like raw cuts going bad, okay, we can bounce back. We'll drop a couple keys. Equip cuts going bad, we're going to bomb out. Like, it's, you know what I mean? You can't afford that. Like, you just can't, because your gear's not going to fit the same. And that's what happened there. I opened up at a weight that I had done for like a triple in the gym. I mean, it was light and it didn't go anywhere. And we pulled the shirt down more and tried to get more out of it and it still didn't go anywhere. And actually, I lost my mind so bad in the warm-up room in the back because I was so angry at myself. They drug tested me and I bombed out of the meet.
Drug test, like, this guy's raging.
I was like headbutting a wall. I was out of my mind.
You are very intense. I remember in Reno, because you're such a nice guy. Like, we're talking now, like, this is how you are, like, day to day, and like, you're such a sweet, nice Southern gentleman, you know. And but yeah, you have intensity when it comes time to actually get out there and lift and stuff. I definitely saw you in the warm-up room getting fired up and stuff.
Yeah, you have to. I mean, that's the one spot where we can let it out, right?
Yeah.
And if I want to get my mind right, you got to go to a kind of a dark place, right?
yeah. Some of us do. Yeah. I definitely do.
It's what works for me, you know, is I have fun until the meet. I have like, you know, just like dumb, like pop rap playing and it's fine. But then like, once I step foot on that platform and I'm about to put the weight in my hand, I just got to go to that place and then I'm fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I lost it at that meet because everyone was going to Tokyo, you know, like Will Thacker, my training partner, Doc, they were going to Tokyo and it was like, oh, I don't get to go.
That's Bench Worlds was that year.
Yeah. And Tokyo was everyone wanted to go to that, you know?
Yeah. Because
it kind of blew that opportunity, but you got to make those sacrifices, man. Nobody gets out of this equipped scot-free. You're going to, you know, knock on wood, I could go to South Africa and bomb. That's just, you know, it's part of the reality of what we accept on the equipped side, you know?
Yeah. Bombing out's just part of doing business.
It doesn't need to be like, I hope I don't. Right. But you get up to that level, it's part of the learning experience, you know?
But in that case, also, that was the last time that you had cut to 93. Since then you've been sticking at 105, and that's probably going to be a little more stable. You know, like you said, you're probably going to see more of these kind of bomb out situations whenever you try cutting and your gear doesn't fit right. Looks like you only have ever bombed out one other time, and that was a Palmetto Classic.
Yep. That was the time I passed out under the bar twice.
Okay. Yeah.
And I wanted to go for a third and James was like, you're done, man. Like, let's stop. Like you've passed out twice.
We can't,
what are you going to do? You're done.
Can't keep like, jeopardizing these spotter loaders.
No. And like my mom was in the crowd and she was losing it. And she's like, James, no more. And I was like, I'm gonna take one more. And James's like, no, we're done here. You know, you learned your lesson. And that was another situation where he told me like, that shirt's too tight. We need to get you in a bigger one. Okay. When I bombed out at Bench Nationals, you know, he kept telling me, look, 93, I know you like being 93. Like I felt healthy at 93, but he's like, that's not going to be a great weight class for you, man. You're too tall. You're not built for the leverages at 93. Let's, you know, if you want to be like when I started with him, you want to be one of the best in the world, you're going to have to do it at a weight class where you have that capability, you know?
Yeah. Wow. I mean, just right there between those two bomb outs, I believe those are only two. They're only two DQs that you have on Open IPF at least.
Yeah.
Shout out Open Powerlifting. Everyone go be a patron there. We talk about them on the thing. I put the link in all the YouTubes and everything like that because, you know, we rely on this stuff. It's such a dream that we have it. But those two bomb outs, one, you're cutting and the shirt is too loose. One, you're trying to fit into a shirt that's too small. I mean, that's the narrow window of equipped lifting of like, and you hear about it in Formula One and stuff like this too. It's like the car is in this narrow window. And if you make a tiny little mistake, you're off, you know, there's no adjustments. I mean, you have to try to adjust on the day, obviously, so that you can make it work. But like, if the shirt is just way too small or way too loose, it's like, you better lower your openers or else you're done.
Well, and then with it's like this, touch.
Then you can't touch. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's, man, it's a double-edged sword, man. That's what makes it so fun and exciting about equipped and even just equipped bench in particular. So,
yeah, no, it was good. So I've learned a lot, you know, through actually listening to James now and then, you know, my own stuff, you know, battle testing it and, you know, going through and getting those reps at Nationals last year, right? Like I probably could have just taken a raw opener and made the national team. But you know, some of the guys were asking me, why didn't you just do that, man? Like get to South Africa. And I was like, this is a chance to battle test myself. Like I've traveled out here to Reno. I've put in the work leading up to this. This is another chance to get better and I need all the reps I can get. So, I mean, that one, I missed my opener, you know, just technique wise.
Yeah. Yeah. Missed your opener, missed your third. You got your 295.
Yeah. So that third was kind of a jump based on that shirt, but I had a chance. So Adam Mamola, I think you're going to talk to him in another episode. Yeah. He's like a legend in the sport, you know, especially in single ply bench. And I never thought I would be in a position to where I could challenge him for best lifter ever. Like I was chasing guys, Mike Ferrantelli, who we can talk about. Tim, God, I can't believe I'm forgetting his name. He's the head coach out there at Midland.
Tim Anderson.
Anderson. Yeah. Like these are guys who I was looking up to like maybe one day, but Mamola was untouchable, you know? And I look up at Nationals and I realize if I go up 2.5 kilos, I can have a shot at beating them for best lifter. So I'm like, you know, like I've already secured my spot. Let's do it.
Yeah.
And I rode it to lockout, couldn't lock it. But it was still good. That was a tough one too, because I was also helping coach Will Thacker and Jordan Coomer out there.
Oh yeah, you were working. You were working, man. I was there. I watched all of this go down and stuff. And like, I remember the because James was not there. You were kind of being the coach of everyone. Like you were kind of back there helping out everyone as much as possible. And there's a few other people too. Steve Petrenzik was there.
Yeah. Right?
So
he had his stable and I was really just working with Will and Jordan, but mm-hmm. you know, James told me not to, like, hey, I got this. And my dad was out there with us. He was on the phone with James. So it was like James was there. But I wanted to make sure they got their openers. And once they got their openers and I missed mine, I had to go in the back and go to my place and be like,
that's right.
You guys are good now. I'm leaving the rest up to you, but like, I got to go make sure I can punch my ticket, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I remember that. I remember that's when you got to intense as hell and all that. Yeah. I remember.
Yeah. I got to go there. I it's part of it for me, you know?
And then I remember at some point when the light bulb kind of clicked that like you could beat Adam for best lifter. And it was it's on now. That was really cool.
Yeah. I never thought, I mean, Adam's a legit. Easton Schuster is another one. He's hopefully going to come over to PA. He's another one I like battling with. He's one of those 93s that I just battle with him for overall weight because he's incredible as a lifter. But mm-hmm. yeah, him and Adam, Adam's just been a legend forever. So the fact that I, you know, have the opportunity, I'm like, this might never happen again. You know, like I got to try it.
Yeah, never say never though. you'll have another shot at it here in about a week, you know, so to see what's up. So talking about, nationals that we were just talking about, bench nationals from this last January in Reno. Let's go back to nationals in Orlando, equip nationals last year, and tell us about kind of what happened there. Cause it looks like, you know, you took like a token squat and dead, and then you had a hell of a bench.
Yeah. That one was a nuts one. So I was actually going to go into that one. I get a wild hair like once every, couple years where I want to go full power again, and I can do it for one meet, you know, but the wear and tear of that, my back shot, like I said before, my knees shot. At this point, I'm just washed up in bench and deadlift. And I was prepping for that. I did the Georgia State meet for a different Fed for before I switched to PA. And I did pretty good. But then I was getting ready for that. And I slipped a disc in my back again. And I was like, I would try to deadlift and I couldn't breathe. And it was bad. I blacked out in the squat suit after I did it. So I was like, all right, I'm just going to go out there and do a token deadlift, token squat, you know, because I already paid for it. Like I can still bench. It'll be another opportunity to put my feet to the fire. Right.
Yeah.
But that one was crazy because we had like 15 lifters under James. And I think we only had that's right. Cause we were getting ready for the World Games. So I had a meet with Noah out there the day before in Rap.
We did practice. So for people who know, Noah Johnson was selected onto the World Games team for last year. And you guys did like a mini camp for him.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, yeah. Mini camp the day before we competed. It's a Saturday night. We did like a little mini camp for him there. Get to know him, talk some smack. Me and Noah have a good relationship. He tells me how awful of a rapper I am until after the meet. And then he's like, good rapping. You know, like that's nice. Me and Noah. And I'm like, yeah, talk some smack to me, man. Make it fun. So
I thought you were talking about a different kind of rapper, which I'm guessing you would be terrible at.
Oh, awful. Yeah, no, knee wrapper. Noah's one of those kids where I can't believe how young and strong he is.
Oh, God. He's one of these.
Could not be more opposite than Kimmy in every way.
In every way. But
other than still, nice. They're both incredibly nice.
Yeah. Those Johnsons, like Jason and I don't know their mom's name, but man, hats off to them. They raised some good kids and some strong as hell kids. What did you go then? Were you at Birmingham and did you wrap him for that?
Okay. Yeah. So him and then Bonica, I didn't wrap her because Jeff came out and wrapped her, but then we had Steve Mann. And then we were supposed to have another lifter, but I think she got hers. I don't know what happened.
She was sick. Yeah. But yeah, he hit a world record squat in your wraps.
Yeah.
And then we're talking about World Games here. People, we said Birmingham, it was in Birmingham, Alabama last year. And it's something that comes around only every 4 years, like very much like a Sheffield type of event with the, theater style seating and all of that. And like people going crazy, like amazing high quality production, top of the state of the art, like custom Eleco racks, like that they made just for that meet and stuff.
We actually have those racks. Cargill bought them.
And so did they were using them in that meet they ran like last week, right? That was on the platform.
We have one out at Elite Iron we actually train on. And he bought all of them. He was like, hey, let me buy everything. So cool. And that whole meet experience was incredible because you had like the athlete camp. So we were all together and the USVI team was there. And it's all US lifters. So we're in with them and then they have training time. So me and James would go over and meet with people to train or we'd go work out. And then they had, you know, just like we would all eat together in the dining hall. And then you had the meet itself, which was everyone had their own warm-up rack assigned. We had every station had like its own little, set up with plates and its own deadlift jack and everything was custom for the world game. So you talk about high quality. That was definitely like a Sheffield level, but longer, right? Cause it was more days.
Yeah.
So, we were all there for a long time and the opening ceremonies were like, you're sitting in the infield and I didn't realize the stands would be that packed. I thought they were going to be kind of empty, but they were packed. And it was a really cool experience.
So cool. It's super exciting. There's rumors going around, can't confirm or deny. I'm not an official.
If we don't talk about it, it's not real.
But we'll just mention, might be some raw lifting going on there next time. We'll see. All right.
I'm fine with some.
We'll put it out there. We'll put it out there that there might be a little baby bit of raw lifting, but we'll see. We'll see. Don't want to jinx anything. Fingers crossed.
Well, look, if we go 50-50, right, then we got to go 50-50 on Sheffield. I mean, that's just a way to make it. Let's bring Blaine Sumner out of retirement and bring him up here to Sheffield to squat 12.
We just got to get SBD to start making bench shirts and all that kind of stuff, though.
I've heard rumors they have a prototype.
Okay. Okay.
Through the grapevine, but I don't think, I don't know if there's enough money in it. That's the downside, right? Is they are.
Yeah. But let's see, by having people like you and Zen and Jeff Douglas and Bonica and people get to know more about Equipped. It could have a resurgence. Like I said, it's exciting. Formula One is now suddenly super popular in the US.
Yeah.
And it wasn't popular at all. Just 5 years ago, in the US.
I'm waiting for him to make a raw bench shirt. That's just like a cotton shirt that's stitched together like this. That just gives you a little like the knee sleeves and we're going to still bring them over,
I sometimes just wear like a really small shirt. It's like, maybe this is what it feels like.
I've wondered why lifters didn't do that in raw. Like just wear a super tight t-shirt in the front. That's normal cotton. And it gives you an extra, 2.5 keys. I don't know. You're
probably more like half a key, but
hey, half a key is half a key.
Exactly. That's the difference of a world championship. Sometimes, it depends on the weight class. Yeah. But getting back to that nationals performance, you just took tokens and then it looks like you had some numbers in here. Did you just do that to time out? And so that, because that's a big thing with Equipped, the courtesy of keeping that time in there so that they can wrap and they can time their time to the next time that they need to wrap someone's knees or whatever it is. Right.
Yeah. So we had 15 lifters and Dale was going up in a pretty hard head to head in the 105s with another lifter. So after I took my token, we just used my second and third to either give Dale more time or to throw the other guy off a little, And it's a strategy. So last minute we changed my third to go right in front of him. So he's wrapped and ready. And then boom, you hit him with that. I don't remember another meet, but
I love that.
So you can really, mess with people on a team status. And it's part of it, right? Like this is, you make the national team. We're there for you, but until then it's Elite Iron Lifters, And so that's what we did there. And then I was actually in the back wrapping people because we had like 15. So they were like, Austin, you got to squat. And I was wrapping people for warm up. So I ran out there and hit my 75 kilo squat and went back in the back again and started wrapping people. So that was good. And then we went out and I had a really good bench day that day. I think I hit 310.
Yep.
Which is a PR now for me. And that was crazy too, because like my forearms were just like swollen from wrapping people, And I'm like, I didn't have time to think. So I could just
maybe go. That helped.
I think
forearm pump helps.
It gave me a nice forearm pump, made the bench shirt tighter.
Yeah.
And then same thing on deadlifts, it's just kind of took a token and focused on coaching everybody else up. So,
but let's not brush past that. 310, 683 pounds, man. That is a hell of a bench.
Yeah, it was
that's massive. I don't even know what it's like to feel that in my hands for a deadlift.
I don't either.
Hold it over your face. That's crazy.
Yeah, the only time I've had that much weight on my body was over my face. I've never squatted that. I've never pulled it. So bench is definitely my top lift. But, it's everything. It just makes the technique more important. Every kilo you go heavier, your margin for error grows smaller. So you know,
for sure, man.
Someone that you see miss like a 325 bench might be able to hit that once out of every 10, right? But like, yeah, maybe just not on that day, you know, or that lift. And technique becomes super important the heavier you get.
So looking at, okay, and then tell me about how the rest of the meet went. Same kind of deal, were you like playing strategy games and stuff like with your second and thirds on deadlift?
That's exactly what we were doing. On that one, I think we were giving Dale more time to where he knew. Because on that one, like if you put someone's straps up and then you pull them off, like it's not a big deal. You got to wait 60 seconds. Okay, I'm fine.
Okay.
But in wraps, that 60 seconds sucks. So yeah, you know, it's all strategy. It's all games. At least, you know, so whenever that happened, I was like, look, put in whatever you need, you know, to get there.
I love this. So like you put in a number to jump, you drop down your third to get in front of this guy. Now he's got to wait and he's already wrapped up and ready. He's got to wait 60 seconds with the knee wraps on.
Yep.
Dude, what a cool element of a strategy. Like I never even thought of, like, there's stuff like that on the raw side, where you kind of can catch someone off guard and maybe get them out of rhythm or something like that, but it's not going to really hurt them that much.
No.
I mean, yeah, there's a certain amount of like you're hyped and you're ready to go. And then suddenly you got to like cool the jets off for a second and then go back out. But that's,
yeah, you can adapt to that. Like,
yeah, but 60 seconds in wraps, like you can't feel your toes after that. You're not gonna feel any part of your leg. Probably
you can't
after
walk
that.
Out there. You're just sitting there like, really? Like, I don't have time to rewrap. I just got to sit here for 60 seconds. This sucks.
Wow, man. Yeah, I freaking love that strategy stuff. That's what makes it a game. That's what makes it a sport and so much fun.
Oh yeah. That's what we live for. Right. There's last minute, you know, you can mess with people with attempts. If you got two lifters in a flight, you can really mess with people. So that's the fun part. Now, when it comes to benching, it's a little bit different, right? There's still strategy involved, but a little less than, I feel like squats, you can really get in their head early and really jack up a meet for your competition.
Yeah. I mean, just that 60 seconds in wraps will really hurt you, but yeah, bench and stuff is probably not going to be as big of a deal. I remember Burford was saying in the warm-up room, because it's a very big thing getting wraps done and then having your lifter basically you stand them up and they should just be walking straight to the platform and getting straight out to the bar. That's ideal. Yeah. Right. And I remember something happened in high school Nats where the monster Chase Lawton was basically like got held up. I think they misloaded or something, and he was basically having to stand there for a minute in his wraps. And I remember Burford, you know, and he hit it. I think he nailed that squat. And then he came back and he's just like, I was asking him about that. And he's just like, it's just, you have to adapt. Like you just have to do it. Like it sucks, but you just have to know your legs are still there, even though you can't feel them, and just do it anyway. So what happened in that battle with Dale and all that? I know he ended up making
Dale got smoked. He got smoked. We did everything we could.
Oh shit.
He got smoked in that one. Dale ended up making the team though, but
he did make the team. I knew
he did make the team, but it was like, it was off an alternate spot. Right.
Okay.
If he would have won that, he would have got it instant in. And yeah, we tried to do everything we could. He actually had a great showing at national or at worlds, but at nationals, it wasn't as good.
And who was he going up against? Let's give,
I forget his name, man. He originally competed in Ecuador. I think I'd have to go back and look at last year's nationals. A strong lifter.
Sincel Power is his Instagram handle.
Sincel Power,
He's an awesome guy. Let me pull him up here and look, man. That meet is like so deep because there's so many different age classes and everything like that. He is a ridiculously strong dude.
Yeah,
super ridiculous. Sweetheart, nice guy. He must not have been able to go to Worlds.
Yeah, I think that's what happened. It was something with like this is all just what I heard, and I'm speculating. It was something with a visa and a passport and it being in the American name or not, you know. And to be on, I know you have to have an American passport to be on the U.S. team, at least the nationals. I think they allowed him to go down to the NAPFs, though.
He was able to come down to NAPF for sure, and he kicked ass there. I think he's a North American champion. Nelson Martinez.
Yes.
Nelson Martinez.
Because he's who I was looking at whenever I was healthy, and I was like, maybe I can chip him or Dale.
Yeah.
He's an absolute freak. So he'll be there again, I believe, at Nationals.
I believe so as well. And one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. Got to hang out with him and his wife down in Panama at NAPF. Sweetheart people, you know, he doesn't actually wrap very tight. I remember Jim Brown was telling me, I think he wraps himself. think he wraps himself.
That's probably why he was able to stand there for 60 seconds and still go smoke that squad.
Yep, there you go. There you go. Because, yeah, he doesn't wrap too tight. And he does a different kind of wrap, like an X wrap or something Jim was telling me about down there in Panama. It's so cool. It's like all these little interesting details about it. But, yeah, he's an amazing guy. So good. I'm glad we could put some respect on his name. But, yeah. I don't know what his status is. I want to say he's going to be there in Scottsdale. I hope he is because I love seeing him in the gym. He is a squatting machine, dude. Like he just squats like a billion pounds. Like every time you just see, it's like reds and reds and reds and reds.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like Jesus squatting out there, but he's like a 105, right?
I think him and Dale have another good battle out there. Should at least. So I'm excited. I'm actually going to Nationals. So I land back here on like a Tuesday and then Friday I fly out to Nationals. So from South Africa to Nationals, I'm not competing, but
yeah,
we have, I think, another like 14 athletes. So James was like, hey, I need your help. Can you come out? I'm the head coach of the NAPF team, and we have a really quick turnaround. So like,
yeah,
we'll talk about that for a second. So if you make the NAPF open team, the top eight based off the 3-year Carpino, James takes right off the bat. Right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then from there, if you hit the qualifying, which is the top three, I believe, it's a 5 Carpino or above. Mm-hmm. I'd have to look it up, but if you hit something that, you're auto qualified and James takes you, and then it goes to that reserve list. And then based off that, I get the next 8 for the NAPFs. And those invites are going to go out like within 24 hours, basically, of the meet.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a 48-hour window to accept or deny. So we're going to have an email going out that basically gives all the lifters a heads up. Like, hey, if you want to go to NAPFs, you need to have X, Y, and Z completed, because you're going to have 48 hours to do it once we send out invites. Because the turnaround's so tight, nominations are due, you know, I think like a week later.
Yeah, it's very fast. It's crazy how this stuff works with like being able to schedule hotels and then keep it in the IPF calendar so we have time. Yeah. Like I know it was like after Sheffield, like we had to, I think they had a similar, very fast turnaround. I remember Austin last year, the first year, we was very fast turnaround for Classic Open Worlds as well, where they basically had to accept like 2 days later. But yeah, the qualifying is if you win your weight class and you hit a Carpino 5.
That's right.
And then you're auto qualified. And then the next 8 go to the NAPF team.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a common confusion. It's not the top 8 from Nationals, because if you don't hit that Carpino, you go into the alternate pool.
Yeah.
And the alternate pool has the lifters from last year's Worlds too, you know, and if they're not competing, you know, so technically like Joe Capp could, if he's switched over from what's that called? USVI.
Yep.
He could use his total from last year and make the national team. So hitting that 5 Carpino is really important if people want to make the team on an auto qualifier.
And what we're saying with that is that for anyone who's listening, if you go to the website and you click on athletes and then you click on national teams underneath that, you can get all this information for all of our US national teams. And so we're on the open equip tab right now, and we're just talking about that. And basically what you're saying, the reason why Joe Capp could use his total, it's not just you can use any total to qualify. Mm-hmm. It's you can use a total if you went to open worlds.
Right.
So that's why if he transfers in from USVI, they can take his total from open worlds. They can also take his total from world games, because he was also at world games, which he didn't get a total. Spoiler alert if you didn't see it. But like for instance, Bonica, if she wants to get onto the open equip team, and there's spots because people don't hit that Carpino 5 and win their weight class at Nationals, she can take her World Games total from last year and get onto the equip team. So it's really good. I really like the system that you guys have, because there's a little bit of flexibility built into it, given the fact that we're in like a little bit of strange times where like half of the American really good equip lifters are in USVI, half are with us. They're slowly trickling over. We want to create a path where you can come over easy and still make it onto a team. Because that was a big reason why a lot of lifters didn't come last year, was because of World Games. They all want to go compete in World Games. But now you see a lot of the lifters that were competing in World Games, Kimmy, Taylor, you know, they're coming over now. So, So anyway, long story short, but, if you don't know by now, if you've been listening to podcasts, NAPF is the North American Powerlifting Federation. It's our regional championships in the IPF. So it's like Euros, if you've heard of Euros over in Europe, or the Asian championships. This is the North American championships, and it is a complete like you want to think of something like Mega Nats, or like how the way that IPF Worlds used to be, where it's all divisions, equipped, classic, all the age divisions, all in 1 week, all in like a long, super long action packed week. And this year it'll be in the Cayman Islands. So there you go. So
and we're putting a lot into it this year too. Everybody, we really want to go down there and just clean house. I want all golds. We want to clean house and really put a stamp like, hey, Powerlifting America's here. We're not going anywhere. US is back. You know, sorry, the rest of the world, but we're back.
I'll tell you what, we left with our tail between our legs last year. In Panama, especially on the equip side. I mean, man, they mopped the floor with us in a lot of weight classes. Even on the classic side, it's been a meet that hasn't been super prioritized in the past for Americans, but we want to build it up to that level of Euros, like, it's a big deal to make it onto the North American regional championship team. The US national team headed to the NAPF, like that's a feather in your cap for sure. If you make it on that team, and it's a big deal. Ray Williams is coming. So on the classic side, so that's going to draw a lot of eyeballs into it. Mike T might be coming, legendary lifter who's done equipped and everything too in the past. He's a World Games competitor, won World Games. And then of course, all you guys talking about it, coming over on the equip side and everything as well. So, and actually it's like, kind of could be like a little bit of a tune-up meet if some equip people wanted to do that and open worlds as well. Cause it's good timing.
That's the tough part is I can't tap into those. So if you make the open team, the chances you make an NAPFs are really slim. Cause I have to exhaust the entire list of alternates, and then I can come back to you. So just know that I'm not passing you. That's what we're trying to do, but we're trying to save you guys for the open team.
Totally.
And yeah, it should be a great meet. We really want to go down there and show out and have a good time. That's what it's about.
Oh, it's going to be like the most fun meet. It is an amazing. Have you ever been to an NAPF before? Mm-mm. It's like, it's a whole different thing, because a lot of the countries that go to it are countries that maybe they might have a handful of lifters that could compete at Worlds, but they don't have the funding to support sending a whole bunch of people over to Malta, which is like really expensive plane ticket. South Africa too, to get from like a place like Panama to South Africa, you got to fly around different places and get there. So they focus on this. So a lot of these teams that are really, really strong, Costa Rica, Puerto Rico, mm-hmm. Dominican Republic, Ecuador. Mexico, Ecuador. Yeah, I mean, Ecuador can come up when it's the years. Right. Yeah. But there's a lot of countries, Honduras. I mean, like there's a lot of countries in Central America, especially, that are super strong. Canada, I think Canada like pretty much kicked everyone's ass. Like they bring a pretty strong contingent.
Ain't having that shit this year.
Uh-uh. Yeah, exactly.
I'll tell you, we're going to plant our flag back in the Caribbean.
I'm excited for it.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time. So we're really looking, and you get international experience, right? And we have that silo now. So if you're handled under me, I coach the same way James does. You'll be going through the same process, same form, same warm-up attempts, same system, to where you're getting some experience of what it's like to be on a world team. So when you get there, you're not shell-shocked.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's going to eventually get to where all of our nationals being so competitive that, making it even on an NAPF team is going to be a very big deal. Like it's not going to be just sort of like the B team or anything like this. There will be studs and it will be stacked for years to come. So I'm pumped about that. And it's cool to see, that you're going to be there, and we're going to have a lot more coaches there this time. And like you said, we're coming to play this time. We're not going to be messing around.
11 coaches there based off my count. I mean, it'll be good. Yeah. A lot of support.
Yeah. We'll have a lot of support. We'll have some media people there as well. everyone wants to go to the Cayman Islands. You know what I mean? It's kind of like the treat at the end of the summer too, after a long summer of other meets and whatnot. So, but okay. I don't want to take too long. I don't want to go too long. Yeah. This is supposed to be a quick check-in. Like I warned you, sometimes they go 2 hours anyway. We're calling it quick, but it's not that quick, but we covered a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So quick, let's do a little mini preview of South Africa Bench Worlds coming up. And let's talk about you, and let's talk about Adam. So you guys, Adam Amola in 93, you, Austin Brown in the 105, you're the two equipped open benchers. That's the full extent of our equipped open team. So how do you guys stack up, and where do you think you guys are going to place? Because you're both nominated, I believe, in like fourth.
We're both nominated fourth. Yeah. Yep. So how Adam hit that number at 83 kilos.
272.5.
Yeah, if you look back at Adam's history, he's benched, I think he's benched like 320. He had the world record at one point. So I don't know where his top end is. I mean, he could go in here and open up at 310 and put everybody in the dust, you know?
Which, by the way, the highest nominated total in that weight class is 300.
Right.
So if he can open at 310, yeah, he's probably going to win.
But I don't know what he's going to open at. I know what he's capable of, and he's every bit capable of 330 if he's hitting on a hot day, which is nuts. Yeah. I think the world record there is like 350 by the Ukrainian. I forget his name. He's an incredible lifter. But, yeah, Adam's every bit as capable. He had just cut to 90 or to 83 for last year's Nationals, and I guess he decided to bump back up. So everybody needs to be put on alert in that weight class. Your chances of winning with Adam in there are going to be pretty slim. If he hits one, you're probably going to go home without that gold, because he's one of those competitors and he's been around. He knows.
Yeah.
I saw the Japanese lifter was actually posting like, "Uh-oh, Adam's coming. Adam's bumped up to 93. I need to really step my game up, because you're not going to just like cruise in there on him." So yeah, he's got. If he hits a bench, he's meddling. That's the way I look at it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Very good chance for gold there. When you go down to my weight class, we're pretty stacked here. Michael Gibson, the Great Britain, he's turned in 285, so he has the Great Britain record. But I mean, he's capable of hitting in the 290s. I'm topped out at 295. There's no way I'll do over that.
Let everyone know.
So I'm just gonna stay right there in fourth. But then you got Oliver Dahlqvist. I mean, I know he's really pushing to hit a 325. That's the full power bench record.
Okay.
And he took a ride for it at the Euros and missed it. But I mean, his range is up there, right? He could hit 320. Mm-hmm. The Japanese guy, Naoki Hasegawa, he's a young dude. I think he's like 23. I mean, he's young and he's hit 340 in training. So he won last year with a 322.5.
Oh, wow.
But that's training, right? Like when you go across the world, 325 could happen. And then Tumen Jargal out of Mongolia is a legend. He has the full power. He was at the World Games. He set the full power bench record at 325. So,
wow.
He's very capable of hitting up to probably 330. And I think that's probably what it's going to take to win, is one of these guys. Either Naoki or Tumen Jargal is going to hit 330. I'll take my 295, and then me and Oliver will battle for third place. As far as I'm concerned,
yeah, you got to have something more than that up your sleeve, I'm guessing.
That's it, man. I'm simple.
You hit 310 before. I was thinking you might have
a day.
No, it wasn't. You just said that you had to wrap a bunch of knees and you had to.
No, but that was local. The local
needed this.
I'm more laid back. I'm going international here, so yeah.
You're
no,
planning on getting food poisoning.
I might get food poisoning. You don't know what's going to happen, right? No, seriously. Like when you go equipped, we can sit here and do this, but
yeah,
like the chances of Oliver, Naoki, Tumen Jargal, or me bombing, or one of those guys is probably going to, right? It's just part of the game. Yeah. And then when you get up to Adam's class, one of those top three is probably going to. So
yeah,
both of us have a chance of meddling. Adam, I think, has a chance of gold. We'll see if I can pull out a third to aim somewhere up there. But that's the beauty of equipped, right? Is like, it doesn't matter.
You don't know. It's interesting. All these nominations then are pretty low compared to what you're saying. So
I think we all had the same idea here.
Yeah, kind of nominate super low.
No, just nominate probably these guys are probably going to open higher than their nomination.
That's exciting. That's interesting.
I will tell you, I will not I will open where I can touch, the lightest I can touch, because I don't play that. So if I can touch 280, I'm opening at 280. And I'll make big jumps, but I want to get on the board. So
yeah.
But yeah, sometimes it's like, just lead the pack. And, if you get your first bench, you're leading the pack. You basically want it when it comes to bench.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's that's basically where we sit there.
No, that's really cool. And it looks like Japan is just like stacked in bench, man.
Japan's always stacked in bench. I mean, they really are. I modeled my whole bench press style after, Japan, because they all bench. You can line up 10 Japanese lifters in a row. They all bench the exact same way. And it's incredibly efficient. I was actually looking forward to the 83 showdown between Kadama
and Adam.
I think Adam, I really think Adam could have had 305 to 310 in his range. When I was competing with him at Bench Nationals, he went in the back and tossed me a shirt. I go, "What's this?" He goes, "That's my tight shirt." I go, "What are you wearing?" You know, he goes, "It's my loose shirt." It's like, you just beat me in your backup shirt, man.
He's playing with you.
He's a legend.
He's trying to get you to go out of pocket, which you did, and mission accomplished. But yeah. But the Kodama, I mean, he's a legend in the game. I mean, he's born in 1979. He's one of the older lifters, and like just an absolute stud. Still here, nominated top. You know, him and Adam are like the OGs, veterans. Yeah.
He's usually a 74. He's benched 300 at 74, and he's up in the 83s now. So I mean,
he's going up a weight class.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and Adam traditionally benched in the 93s. He just cut down to the 83s. So.
Okay,
that's why I was kind of hoping Kodama, you know, goes up and Adam comes down and we have a showdown.
That'll be sick. Yeah,
yeah,
but still it'll be, looks like there's a bunch of people for him to battle with anyway, and then like same with you. Looks like Ukraine's got a lot of, you know, they're always good on equip, but they've got a handful of lifters, not in every weight class, but that's nice to see that they're coming back.
Yeah, I talked to a couple of the full power guys and I was like, why aren't, you know, usually we have a couple, there's a Ukrainian 105 who's incredible, Betiar. And I was like, why isn't he, you know, back in? And he said, I don't think we're going to travel that far. It's pretty tough for them to travel right now.
Yeah,
so,
man.
It's not if they can lift, they have lifters, you know, it's just, can they make that trip? You know, it's not in Europe. I mean, it's a far trip.
And it's, I mean, they got a lot going on right now with the war, and it's just, you know, it's just like, yeah, you can't be away from family and stuff. Like, it's going to be tough. One of the, you know, the IPF Worlds on the Classic Open best lifter from, I believe it was 2019 or 20, I think it was a 2021 Worlds is from Ukraine too, but he's back on the nominations. So
no kidding.
We'll see. And I've seen a little bit of training footage from him too, looking like he's, you know, strong as hell. Obviously he competed, I believe in Euros and just had a kind of off, you know, off day. Obviously he's just getting back.
Yeah.
But it'd be good. It's cool to see Ukraine popping up here on a lot of these nominations and stuff, but all right, let's, who else would you want to mention, like of your homies and stuff that are on the equip team?
So just dropping down into like from there from to Masters One, Luke Hannafin. I mean, his name's been around forever. He's an 83 nominated first. His nomination is also, I think, kind of low. Luke's been in the game forever. Super strong lifter. Traditionally, I think he was 93 and then he dropped down to 83. So
okay,
he's getting a little older, but he's still got some insane power if he puts it all out there on the platform.
He's going against an OG that's five years older than him, and they have the same nominated total from Japan. So we're going to have a lot of battles with Japan.
I have a Japanese flag on my wall in my garage and a Swedish flag and a Mongolian flag. So when I train, I got to look at my competition.
I like that.
I like it, man. It gets me amped up. But yeah, Japan's stacked as always. So that's it that I really had in the Masters One. When we moved to Masters Two, it really kind of heats up. So in the 105, to start in the 66, Steve P is actually the coach, the head coach of the U.S. team, and he'll be competing. There's only two in his weight class, and he's pretty, I think he's a 150 nominated total, and the number one guy's a 162.5, so he could make a hit there. But then the real fun starts down here with Will Thacker. So this is my training partner. We started training together when we were right around the same weight. We both benched around 500, and James came to me and said, "Hey, I think we're going to bring him in. Do you care?" You know, and I was like, "Why are you asking?" He was like, "Well, cause you know, sometimes I was like, fuck that. Iron sharpens iron, man. Let's go, you know, bring him in." And yeah, he's an incredible dude. Great friend. We both help each other out tremendously. And he's nominated at 245. He competed in Tokyo. He's got a really solid shot of winning this year. So I'm hoping he'll bring home gold for that Masters 2-105 spot. And then Mike Ferrantelli in the 120s is kind of sandbagging it here with his entry. He entered 105 because he would have bombed from Nationals, but he hit a raw token opener.
Okay.
Mike is one of those guys that he actually is one of the original designers for the bench shirt that I used, the Bolt. He's sponsored by Enzer. He's got like seven different bolts that he's going to travel with.
Oh my goodness.
Incredible lifter, benched. I mean, he was a full power guy back in the day and then transferred over to bench only. I know he was like a sheriff down in Florida. retired, got into a pretty bad motorcycle accident, like really bad.
Yeah.
And he's still back. He's like, you know, just got hit by a car while I was on a motorcycle and I'm good. I'm back.
Yeah.
So he could hit 600 pounds easily, you know? So mm-hmm. he's nominated sixth, but he could have a 270 day and end up walking away with a gold as well.
Wow. That would be exciting. And he's one of the older guys in that weight class. Mm-hmm. He's one of the older guys in the M2s anyway, yeah. across the board. So he's probably getting close to being an M3 one of these yeah. days.
The M3s, I just wanted to touch on those too real quick before we change the subject. We have actually some stout M3s here. We have Dana in the 93s. He's an assistant coach on the national team.
Yep.
And then Thomas Sinchik, who's done about every meet that's ever existed in the past 20 years.
Yeah.
he's been in it forever. And then
he's nominated 20 kilos in first place.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's like, that's probably an opener, you know? I mean,
he's probably going to win.
Yeah, I think he won best lifter out of the Masters out there at Nationals. So mm-hmm. he's got a really good shot of winning that. And then, you know, you go down Robert Keller's there, 120 plus, getting his feet wet. And then we got a really cool situation in the 74s with Michael Rodriguez and Daniel Sides, because they're both competing raw and equipped. Michael, I guess he's really got his bench shirt figured out because he's nominated first. And then 5 kilos behind him is Daniel. But then in Raw, I think it's flipped.
Yeah. Yeah. 2 and 4, they're nominated. And Daniel's nominated number 2. So
yeah,
they're going to have a hell of a week together.
Yeah. I think so. You're right. Yeah. You want to go on safari? No, I don't want to go on safari with you. So,
no. I want to kick your ass. Like, we got another few more days to rest up for the. Is Equip going second?
Yeah. Equip's going at the end of the week.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Yeah, we'll be after Raw, so they'll have a couple days of rest. So, yeah, that's pretty much it from the Equip side, but we got some good ones there. I think that'll be fun to watch Michael and Daniel kind of battle it out.
Totally.
And then, you know, if all, you know, hopefully not get too caught up in it to where someone jumps them, you know, because
at
the end of the day, I want to see US out there as number one.
It would be cool to get 1 and 2 in a couple weight classes, you know, bring home some more medals.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So, yeah, that's pretty much the rundown there.
Cool.
CP, I don't think I missed anybody. Yeah.
I think those are a lot of the main contenders, at least for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of the main contenders. And then the Raw side, I'm not going to, hopefully you have, you know, like Hayden on and he can kind of talk about Raw a little bit.
I'm going to DM him right after this and get him on there. But we got to.
Actually, one person I do want to talk about from the Raw side is Mike Mosa, because this is going to be his last Raw meet. No, I'm kidding. I don't know. Dude. I want to get Mike over into Equip so bad because he's built for Equip. And he's got like an over 200 kilo bench at 83 raw. I'm like, man, we could put you in a shirt, be pushing 300 keys, you know, bring you over to the 83s. Mike, he helped me at Bench Nationals. And I told him if he helped me, I'd give him a free bench shirt. So I gave him my backup. I hope he's been using it because I really want to pull him into Equipped. He'd be a good lifter for us.
You know, he doesn't post very much. I swear I saw him post like one flash of the bench shirt, like at one point. And I know he mentioned it to me before as well. Like you said, Mike is just one of these most helpful, nicest guys in the sport. Like, so he helped you out at Nationals. Is that what you said?
Oh, all of us
in Reno.
Yeah. Cause I was like, hey man, do you think you could come over tomorrow? And he's like, well, my family's here. Like I have a bunch of family, I think from California. And I was like, look, man, if you can't, I understand, like spend time with your family. And he showed up the next day and was like, all right, I'm ready to help. And
so Mike Losa,
like, and he still tried to pay me for the bench shirt. And I was like, dude, this is an old bench shirt. Like, I'll give away gear. I just gave 2 bench shirts to a guy from South Carolina because he wanted to try Equip. Like, if I have old gear that doesn't fit anymore, like, take it, keep the sport alive, you know,
for sure. But I mean, just back to Mike, it's like that's he in Austin this year, he was like, he lifted and then he was spotting and loading like the next day or even the same day, next session type situation. He's always will go above and beyond for everyone, always puts everyone else first.
Yeah.
Just one of the best guys in the sport. He doesn't post very much on social media. I wish he'd be on social media more so we could show him more love over there. And I'll be curious.
He's like an Equip lifter. We don't post. So he's perfect for this sport. We just need to pull him over.
He fits in, you know, that was another thing. It was like bench only people are like a little weird. Equip people are a little weird. And he's right in there with all of that. You know? By the way, he's nominated in first place by 30 kilos in the 83s in the M1. So, I mean, can you guys just, we don't have an 83. Can you just get him in a shirt and let him just throw him out there?
We should have put him in on Kodama. Nominations. Yeah.
Just throw him out there against Kodama. That'd be hilarious. Fire. But yeah, like, him and Caden, you know, there's some studs over there on that side for sure. Just to mention a couple more names, we got James Kellerman in the sub juniors nominated first by a while. John Tyler is a junior who's really super strong. So, you know, we got some good ones for sure. And then we got a young classic sub junior, Amelia Gherkin, on the women's side. That's awesome. And then on the women's, on the equip side, Tom Senchitz's wife, Claudia Nagata, is lifting a 69 kilo class too. So yeah, she's, you know, be curious to see. She's always like, she kind of runs the warm-up room as well. Like when she's handling Tom, I remember in Reno and everything, she was in there just really helping out and doing stuff. And it's like, she's a great person. So I'll probably see if I can get the two of them on the podcast this week sometime. Yeah. Because they're really cool personalities too. Like they've been all around the world. She's a Cat One ref, you know? So it's just like very cool people in the sport that, you know, if you go to these bench only meets and you go to, they were both in NAPF, you know, so was Mike Rodriguez and stuff we talked about. And, you know, then you get to meet these really cool people and hang out with them and like, see that there's these like super, the whole other side of the sport that you don't see on social media.
Yeah.
And just really nice people, love to hang out with them. So we'll see if we can get them on here too.
Yeah. I think that'd be good.
Yeah. But yeah, I appreciate that. It was a nice little mini preview show. We'll do a full on one. We won't be as good as you though. You were naming off people from other countries and everything. Like we'll just be like, yeah, this guy's good on our team and that's it. But yeah, it's really nice to get that info from you. All right, so let's do some quick hitters, and then we'll wrap this.
All right.
So first one is, what's your day job?
I am a consultant. I do mainly workforce consulting. So. A lot of talent strategy, compensation, you know, are we paying our people enough? You know, cool. Job architect. It's kind of the way a company's structured internally. Yeah. A whole lot of talking and PowerPoints.
Nice. And you travel a lot with that, huh?
Yeah, actually, that's what I just got a last minute request. I think I got to head up to New York tomorrow night. So last week I was traveling. So that makes it difficult with training, you know?
Yeah.
We usually train on the weekends, but yeah, I'm constantly on the road, and then I'll get a lull here and there where I'm in town for a few months. So those are always nice.
Yeah, that's cool. It's always interesting for me to hear you're like the, I know, we've got a couple other people on the consulting side. Actually they were at both at bench, nationals in Reno, Chelsea Savitt, who won national champion, in the women's division. And then, Justin Rogers, Captain America, former, you know, Army captain, now is graduating from Rice Business School with an MBA and is going into consulting. Oh no, I think he's just going into like, yeah, maybe it's consulting. I'm not sure. Something like that. You guys are all like way above my pay grade, but it's cool to just see like the different, you know, powerlifting is very diverse.
Yeah.
We have people from all different walks of life in powerlifting. You can't just assume like someone's got a 600 pound bench that like they're some kind of meathead or something, right? Like it's like,
I was in construction for like 10 years and then I went back and got my degree. And then I just started last July in consulting. So
that's awesome, man.
But it's always fun whenever you tell that, you know, the partners and stuff like to, like I'm the little, you know, little show boy on the call or something like, it's like 700 pounds and they're like, nice, you know, so it's always kind of awkward, you know, but yeah, it's nice to be a little like multifaceted, you know?
Well, that's just such a cool thing. I mean, just learning as I'm meeting all the people through the podcast and then just being at every meet and just meeting everyone and stuff, you see that we have a really diverse sport here. It's really cool.
Yeah.
Anyone can do it. And it's just one of the things that makes powerlifting really an awesome thing is just the people that we have in our sport, especially I'm biased towards Powerlifting America, the people that I've seen, you know, like we've got a lot of great people on our team and in Powerlifting America. So it's really cool.
Yeah.
You know, there's a funny meme rolling around where it's like, if you're the biggest bench presser in your office, you technically own the company.
legally, our company.
Legally, officially own the company. Yeah.
Legally, I own our company. No, I own. Yeah. I'm the CEO of 100,000 person company because I bench the most.
So. Yeah. Yeah. That's hilarious. You're definitely the biggest bencher. The next thing, I already got this one. Where do you train? Elite Iron, right? Atlanta?
That's it. Yeah, they're out in, actually, it's Suwannee, just north of Atlanta. But if you're in the Southeast, it's an hour from me. I still travel out there once a week because if you're in the Southeast, you need to go see James. Just drop in for a day pass. He'll probably end up coaching you for free for the day and working with you. Like, that's just who he is. But yeah, we got a really incredible roster out there that trains every day.
And that's in north of Atlanta. It's like a northern suburb or something.
Yeah. So Will actually travels from south of Atlanta. It's about 2 hours and he comes up once a week. So yeah, I used to go about an hour and a half from where I used to live. Everybody kind of congregates there.
How far is it from the airport?
Probably, well, in traffic, 3 hours, no traffic, and an hour 15.
Okay, so it's a good way, is it, from the airport too?
Yeah, the airport's down on the south side of the city, so it's down there.
Okay,
it's worth the trip. If you're in the area, go drop in.
Absolutely, yeah. You got to make your rounds all around Atlanta and head up north. Mm-hmm. Where'd you grow up?
So I grew up in Woodstock, Georgia, just north of the city, on the lake. My dad in construction, you know. So he bought a house over there and I grew up right on the lake, you know, hanging out, football, lifting bonfires on the lake. And then I moved up north of there to like Ball Ground, like horse country area. Whenever I moved out, lived up there for a while. And then now I live in Marietta, which is kind of in between Woodstock and Atlanta, a little closer to the city.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. And, what'd you go to school for? Where'd you go?
So I went to Kennesaw State. I got a business degree, just business management. I was one credit away from minoring in accounting, but didn't want to stay another semester.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's kind of a smaller school. I think we're still like the third.
I've heard of it.
Georgia. Yeah. So Drew Cargill goes there now and he's involved with their barbell club. So, before I graduated, I was actually able to get involved with them and coach. I think I coached like six of the kids just pro bono to kind of get them involved and was able to get one of them in a bench shirt. So I was proud about that.
That's awesome.
Equipped lifting. Yeah.
No, that's cool. Yeah. I've heard of it. I mean, they must be known for like football or basketball or something, right?
They just made the March Madness. I'm not good with basketball, but yeah, they made that this year and I think they got knocked out first round, but
okay.
And then their football program's relatively young, but I think they just had one guy drafted. So they're getting there, but usually you'll see them on highlights because they're getting smoked by, you know, Georgia Tech or Georgia State and something. And you're like, oh, it's cool uniforms.
Yeah, that's just the way college football is, sadly. You know,
yeah.
They're kind of in a pretty between a rock and a hard place, to say the least.
But the barbell club's actually getting a little bigger. They bought some. They after I left, of course, they invested in a bunch of kilo plates, and they're like slowly trying to form it in to get a couple ER racks, and they have their own little building on the property that's just cool. It's club sports, but the powerlifters are the only ones that use the weight room there, so they just started transforming it. And they got a couple good lifters there that are coming out.
That's cool, and we got to get them into University Nationals next year.
So I'm pushing them now that Drew switched.
I'm
the dark side over to,
you know,
over to the good fed. I'm hoping he'll pull some of them over too, because it's a lot more opportunity over here.
Yeah, for sure. It's a lot of cool international meets and stuff you can go to. When you're not powerlifting, what's your idea of a good time?
Oh, I like to stay busy. To my wife's disagreement, you know. Yeah. No, honestly, I just like, if I'm not working, consulting is a lot of hours, you know. I probably do like anywhere from 50 to 60 hours a week. No, you know, you got to get 40 billable, so that means you got to work 60 and travel, and then training, right? I'm driving out there, so when I'm not doing that, I just like to chill with my wife. We got a pool in the backyard, hang out at the pool, got a couple dogs. Low-key, I used to love hunting, but you know, since I started this job and really getting into coaching and lifting, I don't have time really to go sit in the woods anymore, but I don't have enough time to train and shoot my bow, but it's that was kind of my other passion, and I kind of had to let it slide for this phase of my life with consulting.
Yeah, well, it'll be there, you know. That's a nice thing. That's the kind of stuff you can still do into your old age and everything, like
have when I retire from hitting big numbers, I can still go hunting and coach, you know.
Then you just cut out the training part and go spend the weekends in the woods. So, and then still coach and still be at all our meets and you know wrapping knees and all that. So that's cool. So if you're going on vacation, do you prefer mountains or beaches?
Mountains 100%.
Nice. Yeah. That was a quick
So quick. But my wife's kind of opposite, right? She likes water. She's a water person. Paddle boarding, like swamps in Florida by herself. She doesn't care. She'll just like take off and go.
Wow.
Yeah. Going to send me pictures of alligators and stuff. And it's just like her on a paddleboard in a I'm like, you're out of your mind.
Wow.
But I like the mountains, man. I like views. I like trout fishing, you know, so we'll go up there and go fly fishing. My dad's big into trout fishing. So that's a little less of an investment now than going hunting. You know, I don't have to
train. Totally.
So
you don't have to train for it. Yeah.
Right. Going up there and going trout fishing is always a good time.
Oh, that's awesome, man. I'm the same way, by the way, mountains, like in a heartbeat, for sure. I'm not scared of the mountains, but I'm pretty scared of the ocean. A beach though, I'm, you know, obviously it's fun.
Beach is fun.
Cocktails.
Yeah. Oceans are terrifying. Alligators.
No, I'm not into swamps and that kind of stuff. I'll take my chances with the bears.
Yeah. You can hunt them.
Yeah. Exactly. You can see them. Yeah. That's a key thing. You can see them coming. Alligators and stuff. Oh, that stuff scares me. But what was your first sport that you played?
Hockey, actually. I played like inline roller hockey for when I was growing up. I don't remember how I got into it, to be honest with you. I think I needed a sport and I saw it and was like, that'd be fun. And I was a goalie. And then I think I still have the record for that little rink for most penalties in a season as a goalie.
You're an animal.
I was quite aggressive, you know, and back then I hadn't really learned how to like hone that aggression in and, you know, control it. And they mentioned football to me like, hey, you really like hitting people. You should maybe consider playing football. And so then I got into football and I loved it, you know, just really let that side of me out. But then, you know, so football was like my first real love of a sport.
Yeah. But that's interesting. In Georgia, you wouldn't think that hockey would be like the first sport that you played, you know, but it was roller hockey.
So it was around that time everyone switched to ice and they were trying to pull me over. And I was like, I think I'm going to play football. So
nice.
Yeah, I got into that probably like 13, 14, a good age to get into it when my body was developed enough to where I wasn't
you
know, getting crazy injuries young.
I remember there was a phase. I mean, we're like kind of somewhat similar in age and stuff where like me and all my boys, we used to play inline roller hockey all the time. Like that was like a very common thing. I don't see it as much anymore. It was a blast. I'll go do it right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a blast. But all right. What's your, do you have a nickname at all?
Nope.
Just Austin.
No nickname. Brown. Just Austin.
Not AB or anything.
No, I don't.
What does James call you? Dumbass.
Yeah, bench queen. Yeah, come here, bench queen. Lay down. You know, he gives me a hard time.
Put that on your shirt, bench queen.
I think he's like, I don't respect a man that doesn't put a bar on his back, and so he'll make me squat from time to time. And I still front and you know, heavy ass rows, and I still train legs like crazy. But he always gives me shit about it. So
that's amazing. I'm
the only person close to him that doesn't squat and deadlift, because yeah, he's pretty big about that. Like, I won't buy. My accountant better squat and fucking deadlift.
Wow, that's cool. I didn't know that. That's a good saying to have. What do you say? He doesn't respect anyone.
I don't respect a man that doesn't squat and deadlift. Yeah, doesn't put a bar on their back. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. That's a good one. Yeah. I have to remember that for the bench nationals next year. To tell Caden that stuff. What's your favorite sport to watch, and what's your favorite football team?
Yeah, college football by far. I'm a Georgia fan. I will bark at you. I'm a big Georgia fan, man. And I was a Georgia fan through the Mark Richt years and through basically since I was, you know, for the past 20 years. And I grew up a Georgia fan, didn't get good enough grades to go there. But that's definitely my team. So it's been a good couple years for us.
It's been great. I mean, it's been a nice little stretch of talent here for a while. And exciting times, man. I'm always happy for other teams to get some dubs and get some rings and stuff like that. I'm from Nebraska. We got 5 rings, so it's like we've had our fill. We're okay.
Oh, man,
it's nice. Man, we played Georgia. Yeah,
you guys are the most devoted. My cousin Reese that I was telling you about earlier, who got me into powerlifting, huge Nebraska fan, and like they're 1-8 and they still sell out every game.
I know.
Everyone goes out there in 0-degree weather to watch them lose 48-7. You know, when they were up 7-0 until the fourth quarter. Your fandom is like it's impressive.
We just had 60,000 people show up to the spring scrimmage. So it's like for a team that hasn't made a bowl game in several years, it's pretty cool to see. But I love college football, and now I'm looking forward to it with the new coach, like actually paying a little more attention to it. What's your favorite music genre? Or what do you listen to the most?
Probably like not as much anymore, but Zach Bryan, whenever he was first coming around, like mm-hmm. I like that weird kind of alternative country, if you will. I like that a lot. I also like hip hop, but like the old school kind of throwback hip hop, like I won't even call it old school. It's just some people call it old school now.
Yeah.
You know, like 50.
Nice.
The good one, you know, but like, so I kind of like the older school 3-6, you know, we'll blare it in the gym and James will make me change it sometimes.
Oh, that's perfect for Georgia.
Kids come in. Yeah. That's kind of my genre. So like weird alternative country and older hip hop.
Nice. So if you had to pick one rapper, who'd be your favorite?
Fuck, that's hard. So I got it down to now.
You can say a few.
It has to be Biggie, right? Like it has to. Like that's the most. But Nas is also, and he's still doing it. Like he just dropped an album.
Nas is hard to beat.
That's why it's tough. But I'd probably go with Nas. Yeah, he's probably the best to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Nas there. I mean, I was thinking you're going to go with some Georgia names, some Big Boy
Andre
or.
That was kind of poppy, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And then Luda fell off and Waka Flocka Flame and all them were a little too new age for me.
T.I. and stuff. Yeah, there's a lot.
Yeah, it was good too.
Atlanta's got a shit ton of good rappers.
It does.
The Dirty South.
Yeah, but if you're talking greatest of all time.
Yeah, yeah.
Then, yeah, Nas has to be, in my opinion, here. Because lyrically.
Yeah.
And for how long he's done it, right? Like Biggie probably could have been the best of all time. Like, but unfortunately we have a small sample size, you know?
Totally. Totally. No, I feel you. I mean, Nas, like anytime I see Nas on a feature or anything like that nowadays, I'm just like, damn, this guy's just still going strong.
Still going. Yeah. I think it's King's Ransom was the one he just released 3.
Yeah. It's awesome.
And it sounds just like his old stuff. Like he's like, he didn't change everything. It's still just as good as it was before. So yeah.
And that's where you kind of see like some of the original talent like that is just, it's timeless.
Yeah.
Like you doesn't need gimmicks and stuff. And you know, it sounds the same. Okay. Last one is favorite movie genre and favorite movie.
Comedy, like just shit I can turn my brain off with, you know? I like to keep pretty busy during the day. So like at night, I just want to shut it off and be stupid. Probably Step Brothers. I mean, it's still so good. Any of those like dumb ones that came out around that time, like Talladega Nights, Step Brothers. I mean, we still quote them. I'm a Will Ferrell. Yeah. Was it Wedding Crashers? Mom, the meatloaf.
Yeah.
You know, so like I always quote that with my dad and shit and everybody. My mom's like, "What are y'all talking about?" And I'm like, "Nah, don't worry about it." You know.
Yeah. What does your wife like?
She likes. She'll watch comedy with me and stuff, you know, but she likes more. I'm trying to think like movie wise, it's a lot of, she watches a lot of like, we'll sit down at night and watch like same thing. She's more successful than me by long shot. She runs like a private equity firm.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so she also likes to turn it off at night, you know? And so she'll watch like, we'll watch dumb 30-minute shows just to like, just fedge, like not talk. Yeah. So, yeah, she gets the powerlifting thing. She didn't at first, but she supports the shit out of me on it. And she got me eating, like I used to just eat a box of protein bars a day and call it a day. And she has me eating like real food and like soaking and taking care of myself and getting better sleep. And so she's actually like, oh, if we're going to do this, we're going to do this. Like you're eating real food. She's helping me meal prep. And it's been
I love that, man. That's awesome. You're a team. You got to have that.
Yeah. Definitely a team.
And then she gets to, you know, travel around with you and stuff. Like hopefully she'll come down to Cayman Islands.
I think she is. Yeah. I think we might end up staying a couple of days after. Cause I told her like, if I'm competing, I'm available, but if I'm coaching, I'm not. Like my mind is. Competing's easy. You just show up. Hey, what do I need to do? Okay. I'll do it. Yeah. But coaching is tough. I mean, you got to be mentally engaged and you can't have any distractions. So.
Yeah. I'm actually going to go, my wife and I are going to go down a couple of days early and, because after the meet, I'm so exhausted, you know, like physically exhausted and mentally too. So I'm just like, let's go down a couple of days early, do our vacation thing. And then she'll leave and boom, I'm right into 8 days of turmoil and hard work. I mean, and a blast, like, cause every day is like you're going out and having fun and every day you're getting up early and getting right back to work and like putting in those hours and stuff. It's fun. It's a, time just goes by so fast at meets, you know?
It does. It does. Yeah. Worlds so, last year was like that and it was over, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, you saw how I am and I'm like, I'm running everywhere doing all this. And so it's like, it's fun. I look forward to it a lot. So, well, all right, man, I appreciate you coming on here and let's go ahead and cut this here. Thank you so much for taking the time and like giving us the mini preview and telling your story and background story and everything and everything you do for the sport, organizing, you know, behind the scenes, helping out with getting stuff going down in Georgia and then with the assistant coaching and then head coaching on the NAPF team. So
I'm just lucky. I hitched to the right horse and James has given me some opportunities. I mean, that's really it.
Well, you raised your hand, you volunteer, you know, you put your name in the ring and, you know, I just can't wait to see where it goes from here, man. It's good to have good people in sport and it's been fun getting to know you. Like we hung out a little bit in Reno too. And stuff, so I'm looking forward to seeing you here and then I'll see you in Cayman and everything. And maybe I'll see you in Lithuania. We'll see.
Let's do it.
So
sounds good. Well, thank you for what you do too, man. You're blowing this thing up and, your powerlifting America is like ace in the hole, you know?
So oh, I appreciate it.
Keep it going, man.
I appreciate it a lot. All right. Well, for everyone listening, thank you so much for tuning in to Powerlifting America podcast. And with that, we're out of here. Peace.
Later.